Afternoon Magazine, we talk with the Democratic candidate seeking election to Illinois' 4th District Appellate Court. The district covers 30 counties in central Illinois. Our guest is Circuit Judge Sue Myerscough of Springfield. Sue Myerscough is Chief Judge of the Illinois 7th Judicial Circuit and Presiding Judge of Sangamon County. Judge Myerscough's Republican opponent in the November election is Circuit Judge Tom Appleton of Springfield. He, too, serves in the 7th Circuit. Judge Appleton will be our guest on Friday, October 16th. The 4th District Appellate Court covers nearly one-third of the state of Illinois. It runs from Adams, Pike, and Calhoun counties in the west along the Mississippi River to Vermilion, Edgar, and Clark counties in the east along the Illinois-Indiana border. In the AM 580 listening area, these counties are included in the 4th District: Champaign, Ford, Livingston, Douglas, Coles, Cumberland, Vermilion, Edgar, Clark, McLean, Woodford, DeWitt, Piatt, Macon, Moultrie, Logan, Mason, Menard, and Sangamon. A lot of territory. Again, Circuit Judge Sue Myerscough is our guest. She's running for a seat on the 4th District Appellate Court. She seeks to succeed Justice Fred Green, who has retired. 6 justices serve on the 4th District Court. Your questions for Judge Myerscough are welcome. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside Champaign-Urbana, you can call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-9455 and 333-9455. Judge Myerscough, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Well, I thought we should begin with a little background, and I'd like you to talk with us about the work of the Illinois Appellate Court. What's the role of this portion of the court system in Illinois?
Well, I'll give you a quick civics lesson. We have 5 districts in the state of Illinois, 5 district appellate courts. And starting at the top is number 1 and ending with the Southern District, which is the 5th District. We're the 4th, as you said, a third of the state in terms of geography, not population. And the appellate court hears the cases on appeal from the trial courts. It decides whether the order I entered requiring an HMO to pay for cancer treatment should stand, whether my sentence to a criminal of life in prison is appropriate, whether the trial judge's awarding of custody to one parent or the other is the correct decision, whether the right evidence was admitted into trial in a civil or a criminal case. They simply sit as a review court and, in essence, make sure that the trial court is doing its job, whether the jury is doing its job.
Hmm. Have you been reversed on appeal?
Sure.
How often?
I do not know.
Hmm.
I know I've been upheld more times than I've been overturned. I'm not a statistics keeper. It's kind of an interesting position to be in. My job was created in, I was appointed an associate circuit judge before I was a circuit judge. And my position as circuit judge was created because many of the cases which occur in this circuit come from state government. They're appeals from the administrative rulings of the various agencies. And so as that judge, I have had the opportunity to sit, in essence, as an appeal court of sorts in cases where there truly is no precedent, no prior cases similar to those kinds of cases, kind of focused me on this appellate court. I enjoy doing those cases where you actually have the full record in front of you at the same time as you have the case law, and you can do a well-reasoned decision. Use writing skills to write a well-reasoned decision. It's very different than sitting in a courtroom with a great volume and saying motion denied, motion granted, or things like that.
Now, a circuit judge, you know, as you sort of just alluded to, makes decisions in her courtroom on her own. In the 4th District Appellate Court, in an appellate court setting, justices work together. Can you offer us some evidence of your ability to work in a collegial setting?
Well, certainly as chief judge for the last 2 years, and that's with 22 judges and two additional years, 4 years total as presiding judge of Sangamon County, I've had to be the judge to take all the complaints and soothe ruffled feathers, both from the outside and the inside, and I think I've done a pretty good job at it.
Mm. Why should voters choose...
Let me, in addition, excuse me for interrupting,
sure.
add that as having been a law clerk in the past and having helped write and research opinions for another judge with other law clerks, I've sat in a very similar situation as that of the appellate court, where you discuss your cases and discuss you know, what the underlying case law is and what the statutes say, and I've thoroughly enjoyed that.
Hmm. Why should voters choose Sue Myerscough over her opponent, Tom Appleton?
Well, it's always a question, how do you decide who to pick for judge?
Mm-hmm.
And running for the appellate court is a very difficult position to be in, you know, as I sit as a full-time judge. And we, of course, are not to directly solicit voters or campaign contributions, and we cannot state our opinions about any matter which might potentially come before us in the courtroom. So to tell you why you should vote for me is difficult. I think the obvious is that I'm the most experienced candidate. I've been a judge for over 11 years now. I'm the most experienced. I'm independent. I enjoy my job as I have it now very, very much, and believe that I have shown the people that I am fair and impartial. I was retained in 1996 with one of the highest retention votes in the state of Illinois. The Illinois State Bar Association now conducts a new system of rating, which includes investigations and interviews with lawyers, as well as the anonymous rating system. And the Bar Association, I thank them, anonymously rated me as extremely well-qualified, which is the best rating they can give you.
Mm. As you said, the Illinois State Bar Association rated you exceptionally well-qualified and your opponent well-qualified. Both of you received high marks from lawyers who returned ballots in the State Bar advisory poll of lawyers. Can you... give us some ideas about what, outside of experience, are there some things that you think set the two of you apart?
Well, we sure don't look alike. I'm the mother of two daughters, 14 and, and 11.
And he's the father of two sons.
Who are about the same age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm a Democrat. I'm a former teacher. I was an English and French teacher. And... truly believe that our future, our nation's future, lies with our children. And I'll tell you, it's been a combination of having the children and being a judge for so many years. It's taken me many years to finally realize that the place where we as judges can have an impact is with the children. And I've been heavily involved in setting up a community project, which, well, a number of them, but this one specifically, which brings in the school children, and we conduct mock trials using the children as participants, as jurors, as defendants, as prosecutors and defense lawyers, and myself as the judge, or I sometimes have a panel of judges including the children, and we then have a jailhouse tour. After sitting as the chief felony judge for a number of years, I realized that I was seeing the same children I saw in juvenile court years before. And I have now, as chief judge, assigned myself the juvenile call because I truly believe that we have to make the children realize that there is a consequence for every action and that they have to go to school and they have to have a job. And I've worked very hard, and, you know, it's been a while. These young people in the past have been allowed to have 8 contacts with the police, 5 contacts with the probation office before they're in court, and then they're put on probation. And what I do is I absolutely, in the correct case, send them immediately to the Department of Corrections. in a case where the child has shown from the time of his arrest that he can improve his behavior, I will give them one chance at probation. And if they do not perform as they're supposed to by going to school, following household rules, following either a curfew or staying on the electronic monitoring, which doesn't allow them out of the house, just for any reason other than going to school, I send them to the Department of Corrections. And it's interesting how word gets around in a community this large. They now know that you do get one chance. And I would like, you know, in addition, just to mention that, you know, as an associate judge, as a circuit judge, and as the presiding in chief, I've held every job in the courthouse. And I believe I've handled them all well, but this job has been running juvenile court the most fulfilling in terms of being able to see some of these children actually have turned their lives around.
Hmm. Have you been able to measure in a quantitative way the effectiveness of your initiatives with juveniles?
No, but we actually, right now, I'm going to a meeting as I get out of this office, which will be the first step in measuring the successes. We have two different projects, which I've begun. One is called the Right Track Truancy Program. With our Attorney General's office, we are instituting the program today. The lawyer, the prosecutor who will be handling the cases is here and on board, and the parents will be brought in to a meeting. There are two meetings set this month. Those children last year who were truants, and they will be explained the law, and there will be active prosecutions of parents and children who refuse to send their children to school, and hopefully most of these children will be brought back into the school system and diverted and will not be prosecuted, but there will be jail time involved in the failure to make sure that your children are going to school. We also have a domestic violence council, which is going to be looking at the incidences of family violence. And we will begin with we're hiring the domestic violence coordinator this week, who will be also keeping track of the statistics on reoccurrences in the areas of delinquency, abuse, and neglect, where family violence is involved. So this will be our first attempt. You know, in the court system, there are very few monies to go around to actually keep track of statistics, and we're lucky enough to obtain these grants through the Attorney General's office and through the Criminal Justice Authority, and we're getting them off the ground. I'm very excited about the future.
Another one of your initiatives, you created a domestic violence court. You want to talk with us about the need for that court and how it works?
Well, how it works, I think, is probably the easiest to explain. We have a judge who is designated as the domestic violence judge. And in the past, when there was a domestic violence problem, an order of protection would be issued in one courtroom. The violator or the offender would be prosecuted by the state's attorney in another courtroom. There might be either a family case with child support pending and a divorce case where these issues have also arisen, in addition to which there may be a juvenile case where the juvenile was involved with the family violence. And all of those cases will now be united in front of one judge rather than having four or five separate prosecutions, different days, coming to court nonstop, the prosecutor in one case not knowing what's going on in the divorce case, the judge not knowing what's going on in the other case. That one judge, who is now Judge Lewis, will actually hear all aspects of the case, and that is with an eye towards coordinating the penalties and the solutions. In terms of the need for it, the statistics are astronomical. The number of cases which we have in our circuit involving domestic violence, and those aren't even, no one actually tracks those at the current time. And we've gone out into the circuit to our six counties and spoken with all of the areas involved. We have our meeting of the Domestic Violence Council tomorrow. Over 275 people have volunteered from areas of religion, medicine, social work, psychiatry, the schools, law enforcement, the courts, state attorneys, to develop a coordinated response to domestic violence. You know, it's seldom that the judge knows what happens in the emergency room, or the police officer knows what happens once he drops the victim off at the emergency room, or the medical staff know what to recognize as potentially a domestic violence situation. So our hope is that we will be able to put on another seminar, such as we put on for over 600 individuals over a period of 2 days, to educate all of us who come into contact with domestic violence about how to recognize its symptoms and what are signs of escalation and what are things that we can do to hopefully eliminate the situation.
Now, how long has the Domestic Violence Court been in existence in the Seventh Circuit?
This year.
Just this year.
We started work on it last year, finally got the people in place since the 1st of January.
And I know that you've said that there really aren't a lot of resources to, you know, measure effectiveness in these kinds of things, but do you have a gut sense for, you know, is this working? Does it have the potential to work?
Well, I will tell you that the parties involved, that's the lawyers, the victim, the perpetrator, the psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, the police officers, have all made personal contact with me to say that they're very impressed with how the system is working. More cases are being disposed of more quickly. People are getting help a lot quicker. And my gut feeling is that this is, we're doing something. We hope to improve it as we go along, but that we're being proactive rather than reactive for a change.
Our guest this afternoon is Circuit Judge Sue Myerscough. She is Chief Judge of the Illinois 7th Judicial Circuit. She is also the Democratic candidate seeking election to Illinois' 4th District Appellate Court. The district covers 30 counties in central Illinois. Judge Myerscough's Republican opponent in the November election is Circuit Judge Tom Appleton of Springfield. He, too, serves in the 7th Circuit. Judge Appleton will be our guest on Friday, October 16th. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. My name is Celeste Quinn. Your calls are welcome this afternoon. Questions, comments, 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Or you can call us toll-free if you're outside Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 1-800-222-9455. As a circuit judge, have you ever experienced a backlog of cases?
Certainly. You must have been reading some information on our courts.
How do you turn that around? How do you get things on schedule? What would you like to say about why and under what circumstances judges and circuits can run into backlogs?
Well, in Sangamon County, the six counties in the 7th Judicial Circuit, we had in the past shown numbers with the administrative office that showed we had cases pending in probate, for example, for 30-some years. And I have to tell you, my father was worked for in the credit department for many years with Sears Roebuck, and I have this mindset that I can't stand to have things not paid or things that, you know, cases which have not been disposed of. So I started digging to determine why, when these judges here work so hard, did we have this kind of a backlog. And I found out, lo and behold, that the backlog was not really with our cases as much as it was with the numbers and how they were being kept. And we have launched, in large part thanks to Justice Miller, a program where we have gone back through all of the old files. I mean, I'm talking back, dating back to before I was born, before the 50s, and determined that many of those cases were not stricken from the books, and we've actively had people involved in doing the review of the files and then the judges striking those cases. And it's been very successful because, as a result, I've also instituted the Supreme Court suggested case management system with the civil cases, which requires a scheduling order to be entered in each case that tracks the case and its time of disposition so that the cases do not sit for a lengthy period of time. And overall, I'm pleased to say the administrative office sent me our statistics last week. which show that now in our circuit, we have successfully, since I've been chief, disposed of more cases than we have had filed. We, at any given time in Sangamon County or any of the counties in my circuit, you can, if you are ready for a trial, ask for a trial and have one on Monday morning.
Now I want to sort of take you from there to the position that you're running for and ask you some questions about management at the 4th District Appellate Court. Has the 4th District Court been effective? Is it delivering justice to the people in the district?
Well, I would certainly say that the 6 judges who are there work very hard on a regular basis. I've been very impressed over the most recent years with how quickly the appeals are disposed of. There's definitely been an improvement from the time that I came to Springfield to practice some 18 years ago. They've taken extraordinary steps to make sure that there is not a lengthy delay, that the cases which need to be heard immediately are heard by the court.
So is there a backlog at the 4th District?
Well, I guess I shouldn't presume to speak to the numbers. I don't have them in front of me. But certainly in terms of my cases which are appealed or the lawyers who I talk to, there have been no complaints in terms of lengthy backlogs. There are always backlogs in our court system because we do not have the manpower to take the case the day it's appealed and rule upon it. And I'm sure if you ask those appellate law clerks over there, they would say that they're swamped.
We have a caller waiting to talk with us on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi, it's been interesting listening to you talk, and I'm glad to hear that you and your fellow judges are taking action to improve the way the court handles situations, especially in the area of domestic violence. It really concerns me how many women are killed each year in this country, and when you talk about making sure that kids understand that bad behavior of the kind that would take them, bring them into contact with police is something that's not going to be tolerated. It seems to me we need to do the same thing with people who are involved in domestic violence situations. I was also reading about a case in Wisconsin recently where, of course it doesn't apply to Illinois, but I'm wondering how this kind of thing would have been handled in Illinois, where an 11-year-old boy walked barefoot in the night to the police station crying because his sister was once again being locked up in a dog cage in the basement in her own excrement without any food. And the presiding judge in that case apparently did not have anybody talk with the children. There are 5 children in that home. Just had a psychiatrist evaluate evaluate the 2 parents. And the psychiatrist just said that they were misguided in their attempts to discipline the girl. And I know there are some people who think that that kind of punishment is okay, but it doesn't sound to me like it makes any sense at all. And this, one of the suggestions in the email list was that courts really should have more than psychiatrists evaluating this kind of situation to come to the truth, and social workers and so forth should be involved. I think you alluded to this a little bit, but could you tell them, do you have any comments about that case? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know which case it is. It's a very sad case. In Illinois, I know they've received quite a bit of criticism, the Department of Children and Family Service, and I know that they do have their problems, but certainly here in our area, DCFS would be actively involved in that case, and it would include a number of social workers with DCFS as well as additional outside agencies such as Catholic Charities or Lutheran and Family Services, who would become actively involved with counseling the family, with home visits. Even after the children are removed from the home, there would be active contact. And in my courtroom, the children would have been spoken to, not just once, but on a regular basis.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for your call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Circuit Judge Sue Myerscough. She is Chief Judge of the Illinois 7th Judicial Circuit and Presiding Judge of Sangamon County. She is seeking election to Illinois' 4th District Appellate Court as a Democrat. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Would you describe yourself as a conservative or liberal judge?
What a loaded question. As a judge, I would describe myself as very conservative. Now, you probably want me to elaborate on what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
I view my position as a judge as very distinct from that of a legislator or the executive branch. What my job is to read the law and enforce the law in my courtroom. My job is not one to create the law. And as such, I use the philosophy of a strict constructionist, and it's not my job to decide what the outcome should be in a case so much as what the law says I should do in the courtroom with the case.
In 1973, in Roe v. Wade, the U.S. Supreme Court found a right to privacy in the 14th Amendment. Do you believe such a right is embedded within the 14th Amendment?
Well, as you know, I stated earlier, I'm not supposed to comment about issues which may come before me, and certainly that would potentially come before me. I will state that Roe versus Wade is the law. The Supreme Court has ruled, and I would follow the law as required.
Concerns have been raised over the application of the death penalty, that a disproportionate number of blacks receive the death penalty. Can you share any thoughts on the issue there?
I have read the statistics, and I am certainly aware that in many areas of criminal law that it would appear that there are distorted statistics based on race. What causes that, I don't know. And every article I read, I have yet to see one which hazards a guess or which can explain the discrepancy. So I guess I will tell you that I have had the comment made to me that in the past our juvenile detention center was similarly contained a specific race, the African-American race, and not Caucasians, not Hispanics. And I have looked closely at that over the last year, and that is not the case any longer. And I don't know how to explain that.
Hmm. Do you have any ideas to why that would have changed?
No.
You said it's no longer the case.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying on any given day that there would be a specific percentage of anything, either of the races, any of them, but there has been the comment made by the detention center that the makeup of the juveniles has changed.
Hmm. What are your thoughts on jury nullification?
Well, I just recently had a case where that was one of the issues. The Fourth District, in fact, upheld me in the case. In fact, the jury had sent out a note asking, if I find all three elements, do I have to find the defendant guilty? And I answered in the affirmative that yes, that did have to be answered in the affirmative. So that's my limited experience with that situation, and I think the correct result occurred.
As we read the paper and hear the news on the radio, we often hear stories about large liability awards. The McDonald's spilled coffee case leaps to mind. How do you, as a judge, decide what's fair and what's excessive?
Well, it is my view that the jury is to make the decision in a given case. The juries, in my experience in Sangamon County and in federal court and state court in this area, we do not have this concept of runaway juries. We have very, very conservative juries. If anything, they would be more inclined to award lesser verdicts than what the evidence establishes that an individual would be entitled to, for example, medical. We recently had a case tried where the medical evidence was established that this was treatment as a result of the accident, but yet the jury chose to award less in the way of medical than what the person had incurred. And it is very seldom in Sangamon County that the juries actually award anything to the plaintiff for damages. So I don't know where these runaway verdicts are, but they just don't exist in my area.
Hmm. At present, appellate court districts are contained within the Supreme Court districts in Illinois. The district lines are the same, and the districts have been the same for many years. A couple of years back now, as the 89th Illinois General Assembly drew to a close, it passed a plan to redistrict the Illinois Supreme Court. The GOP wanted to reverse the Democratic majority on the state Supreme Court, and it pushed the proposal through in the final hours of the session. And the GOP plan divided Cook County, which is now one district, into three single districts. However, the Illinois Constitution says Cook County is one district. So ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the plan was unconstitutional. I'm curious about what you would think about the issue of boundaries, court boundaries. Should new boundaries be drawn? Are new boundaries needed?
Are new boundaries what?
Are new boundaries needed? New U.S. Supreme Court, appellate court, district boundaries needed?
I don't know, truthfully.
Okay.
I believe that we should have fair representation on the courts. For example, this 4th District Appellate Court is made up of 6 people, 5 men and 1 woman, and all 6 are Republicans. And I believe that we have appellate courts and Supreme Courts because we want different points of view so that we have a balanced approach to making our decisions. And for that reason, it would seem to me that you would need people from different political parties, since we do have elected officials, elected judges, rather. And it's, again, I don't want to comment about anything which may come before me, but it would appear that the redistricting that was done a number of years ago within Cook County concerning election of circuit judges, that it certainly had an impact on the different representation of parties in the area. So I'm not saying that it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it certainly had an effect, and I'm not opposed.
Yeah. How do you feel about district appellate courts and Illinois Supreme Court districts? Justices from those two, justices for district appellate courts and Illinois Supreme Court districts being elected at large?
You mean elected at large?
I mean, you know, in this 30-county area, we are looking at, you know, we're going to elect at large in 30 counties. You and Judge Appleton will be on the ballot. What do you think of that system? Should justices be elected at large?
Well, quite honestly, it's a monumental task to run for election in 30 counties while working full-time. And it's very difficult to get to know the voters so that they know you, they trust you. I have to say I have very mixed feelings about both the current systems of elected and appointed judges. I was nominated by Senator Simon and Carol Moseley Braun and then the president to become a federal judge, and was stalled in the Senate for quite a period of time. There's a current stall which is going on right now with one of my judges who's awaiting a vote in the Senate. And, you know, I'm very concerned with the politics involved in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I'm very concerned about the necessity of having judges run on a political platform, one which they may not share. I'm concerned that the platforms make statements about issues that may come before the judges. And quite honestly, I'm very concerned about the propriety of having judges march in parades and you know, throw candy or whatever to children and then not being able to actually talk about the issues in a meaningful fashion. It would seem to me there must be a better system where the system could be depoliticized and appointments made. But I don't know what that system is, and this is an issue I've looked at since my first election in 90, and I've looked at everybody else's system, and it seems it's very difficult to get politics out of the appointment process. Our associate judges, as you know, are appointed by the circuit judges in each circuit, and that system seems to result in the appointment of some pretty talented judges. But, again, it's not a perfect system either, because you have the elected circuit judges making the vote. So I don't know what the answer is.
Hmm. Back to the issue of, you know, these huge at-large districts, one wonders if we have a violation, at least downstate, of the Voting Rights Act.
In what sense?
You know, is it possible the way that the districts are configured to have African American representation on a court?
I don't know. Certainly, having been through the voting rights problems here in Springfield and the change in how we have our city
mm-hmm.
System. Would be an interesting statistic to look at.
Hmm. What is your opinion of the system for retaining judges in Illinois? Does it work?
I think it's improved, and it's improved largely because of the Bar Association's involvement, where there is actually a rating done of judges by the lawyers to give the voting public some idea of how the judges are doing in their courtroom. We have had a number of judges who were not retained. In the last few years, there's been a larger number who are not retained. And I think that's because the voters understand that if there is a problem with a judge, that there's an answer and there's a way to respond.
Come November, voters will decide whether or not to change the state constitution. As I understand it, the proposal would put two non-lawyers on the Illinois Courts Commission. And that commission, that body, has the power to remove judges from the bench. Do you favor that amendment?
Well, I'm a person who, as chief judge, has always functioned on the premise that the public should have some input. And not just the lawyers, and I receive, as I said before, all the complaints concerning my judges, and I make a point of passing on the information at the appropriate time, obviously not if there's a case under advisement or a judge is in the middle of a trial, but after the matter's resolved, unless it is an active problem, in which case I would go directly to the judge and make it be known and take whatever appropriate steps would be needed. I welcome the idea of having these panels include the people.
Back to campaigning for judge in Illinois, and especially for campaigning in such a large district, how do you go about it, and what kind of money do you have to spend on a campaign for 4th District Appellate Court?
Well, I think the answer to that is as much money as you have. My understanding of the races in the 3rd District Appellate Court, which were most recent, was that there was $120,000 spent per judge, which is an awful lot of money. I hope to spend nowhere near that amount of money and still get my message across.
Where do your campaign campaign funds come from?
Your own pocket, for one, and then you do fundraising, which your committee actually does by hosting fundraisers and obviously sending letters. In terms of who are donors, that's a question. I've done something to shield myself from the actual contributors in the sense that I don't accept the money. I don't see what the money is. It's deposited in an account, which I do not have access to. In terms of who comes to my fundraisers, my friends, Democrats, Republicans, all walks of life, professionals, state workers, my walk-in buddy, kids I grew up with who are no longer kids, obviously. Having been born and raised here in central Illinois, I have quite a few friends and relatives who've been good enough to help me.
I want to go back and ask you for a little more detail in terms of what you think you're going to spend on the campaign. You said that in the 3rd District, over $100,000 per candidate, and you said, I hope to spend much less. Do you have any kind of handle on what you'll need?
Well, actually, we have active meetings going on as we speak. The cost of direct mail is being analyzed at the moment. The cost of the additional signs, which are being done, the cost of additional parade candy for the parades, and T-shirts for the walkers. I'm running a very low-budget campaign, to be quite frank with you, because I, for one, am concerned about the propriety of all these things. And for the other, I believe that yard signs, handouts, are litter, and I'm very big in recycling. And I hate to pollute the countryside as well as the parade route. So in terms of an overall estimate, I do not have one as we speak. Mm. One of those meetings is going on tonight, and I know direct mail is very, very expensive. I know television is exorbitant.
We just have a little bit of time left here this afternoon, and I want to go back to some questions about your background. You were appointed associate judge in 1987. Tell us why you wanted to become a judge.
Well, as I said before, I was a law clerk to Judge Harold Baker and was in the courtroom. And as a trial lawyer, I was lucky. I was a trial lawyer, and I was allowed to try a number of cases and to be at the courthouse on a regular basis. And I thoroughly enjoyed being able to read the law and read the cases and write a well-reasoned decision. And I enjoy the whole skill involved in being a lawyer. And as a judge, you get to be both sides. You get to read, review, and understand both the pros and the cons of the plaintiff and the defendant. And I've always found that what I really like doing is making the fair decision. And I get to do that. I applied to be an associate judge, and it was kind of interesting because back then we had only one woman who was an associate judge, and everybody told me, well, don't put your name in. We already have our one woman judge. Then I was told that nobody ever gets the appointment the first time they put their name in. You have to put it in 10, 20 times. And I was very, very lucky, and I put my name in, and we got our second woman judge.
And one last question. What was it that got you from teaching into law school Why did you decide to leave teaching? You were a teacher for a while
mm-hmm.
in the Springfield Public Schools.
English and French
mm-hmm.
Were my teaching. And I have to tell you, I thoroughly enjoy teaching, and that's one of the reasons I've stayed involved with the children in the schools. And it's one of the reasons that I have maintained my position at SIU Medical School as an adjunct professor. I teach mock trials to the prospective doctors. But I had wanted to be a lawyer from the time I was much younger. I just saw my old ninth grade history teacher, Jerry Zuspin, out at the rail the other day, and he congratulated me on my successes, and I thanked him profusely. He'd always told me the way I argued I should be a lawyer and encouraged me to go on and be a lawyer. I was then in graduate school studying Chaucer, and my professor said the same thing to me. He said, you know, you really should try law school. My husband was just starting law school, and I got to attend a few classes with him and decided this really was the thing I wanted to do because I enjoy the multitude of skills that are involved in the process, in the courtroom, dealing with people, dealing with their problems, doing something that can change people's lives.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Circuit Judge Sue Myerscough of Springfield has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. She is Chief Judge of the Illinois 7th Judicial Circuit and Presiding Judge of Sangamon County. She is seeking election to Illinois' 4th District Appellate Court. The district covers 30 counties in central Illinois. Coming up in October, coming up on October 16th, that's a Friday, on the afternoon magazine, we will have Judge Myerscough's Republican opponent in the election. His name is Circuit Judge Tom Appleton. He is also of Springfield.